question. I was not here at last week's meeting. There, my understanding is that there were some cases that were...
I will discuss with you after the meeting how we need to handle that, Dr. Parsons.
Thank you.
Thank you for asking.
But that's sort of the whole board. The whole board will know that, Jamie. Understand that. I mean, I understand it because I've been on the board and I've read it before. But the whole board will know, you can come at any time and listen to the case you just had. If I listen to it, I could...
We've got some training, and I think it may, we may be talking a little bit about it in there.
Yeah, we've got rules and procedure in the training.
Okay, I mean, it is that way when I got on the board. Before we go any farther, I've got a question for Jamie. I've been on this board. I've never, ever heard of reducing the lot size. It was never, ever told us of this, of how you presented it. I've never heard that, because we have cases before that we could change, I guess. The old board, not you guys, the old board. Well, none of us ever knew that.
What do you mean?
Yeah, and that's why if, I mean, not to talk about a case that we just heard, but in general.
Yeah, in general.
You know, that's why what we have before us was an application with something that's already been built. There have been times, and I think you may recall some of these, where there's been something proposed and we said, we can't grant you 10 feet, but we think you could do with 7 or 8. In many cases, because of the testimony at the hearing, that, you know, I could make it smaller or what have you.
We asked that, yes, but I didn't know back later you could go back and change it.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah. Well, we've done that. We have. We have. Where we've had people, we've reduced it. It's not happened often.
No.
But it has happened.
We can get to that.
Okay.
Yeah. But again, not something frequent.
No. I mean, I think we've hardly ever did that before.
And I think it was because there was something in the record that would allow that.
Okay.
You know, something where somebody said they were asking for 10, and then maybe they said, but I think I could take these two steps away or something.
That's why they were here, yes.
And in the vote, it was amended to reduce it.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
We've done that.
Okay.
Sorry if that wasn't clear.
Yeah, I didn't understand that, though. Yeah. I mean, I know we did it when they were here, and we asked them, can we reduce it that way? And they said, yes. Mm-hmm. I know you could do that. No other questions.
Okay,
so I am up. Since most of you are pretty new, except for Mr. Workman, who's been here for a while, but I thought this would be also a good refresher for everybody, just to kind of highlight some things for zoning-wise. What I did is I put the setbacks together in a little matrix. So even though you have your zoning ordinance, this is all like, you know, a good quick cheat sheet if you're looking for something, because we have a lot of different setbacks. We have, you know, we have small lots, which, you know, under 10,000 square feet, your side yards can go down to 5, your rear yard can be reduced by 5, and you can do an average front yard setback. However, if you're in AR1, you can actually, and you're less than 100 feet in width, or 100 feet in length in front road frontage, or you're under 20,000 square feet, your side yards actually come down to 20 to 10 feet, but your rear and your front stay the same. So there's a bunch of different options in the code. It also depends on what type of subdivision you are, because if you're an RPC or a cluster subdivision, you can have an AR1, you can have even smaller setbacks, because you can have normally instead of a 20,000 or a 3/4 of an acre lot, you can go down to 7,500 square foot, so your lots can be 75, your setbacks are 25, 10, and 10. So we just put that all together right here. It's all there. If you're looking for a good cheat sheet, it's like, hey, it's AR1. My lot size is what? You know, this is what my setbacks can be. So we did that for the AR, the MR, and GR, which are pretty much the same, and your HR and your HR2, which are your high-density residential. You don't typically see a lot of those. What you typically see are the AR1s and the MRs is what typically you see. So, you know, take a look at that. I think it'll be helpful for you to look at when you're looking for lot sizes and square footage and setbacks. So we also did it for the commercial districts as well. This is the first time we've ever attempted that for the commercial. You're going to notice there's some The B1 is an existing zoning. If you're going to see typically a setback from the commercial, you're typically going to see from the B1, the C1, and the CR1. Those are the standard. They have been around for a very long time. They're more or less the beginning of zoning in the county was B1, C1, and then 2000s we added CR1. The B2, the C2, the C3, the C5 are all newer, but I wanted to give you some examples of some commercial zonings that were out there that you could potentially see in the future. Again, it gives you the frontage. Typically state-maintained roads, you're going to have a larger frontage. Private roads, it's a lesser frontage, typically about 10 feet, especially for residential. Setbacks are going to be different from your commercial districts. It also kind of explains what a through lot, and I've got some examples that I'll give you for that, because again, if you have a through lot, you have two front yards. Though most people think of it's the rear yard, actually from the zoning perspective, it is a front yard. So again, you've got your lot sizes, so you can get an idea of what your standard lot sizes are, get an idea what your frontages requirements are, and then, you know, with or without septic. And feel free, if you have any questions at any point, just feel free to ask. So I thought what might be helpful is talking about buildable area. So as I explain it to the public all the time, it's the invisible area where anybody can build their house. So in this example, I did a couple of different corner lots. So you have a 5,500 square foot lot. That is a small lot in this county. That doesn't meet any code requirements for lot size. So if you look at it, you have Main Street and Washington Street. You have a front yard and a corner front yard. So at that point, your setbacks as to where you can build a house, even though it's a rectangular shape, you know, it's squeezing that buildable area down to where, you know, it could be difficult to build a house. And the other one, well, it's, you know, a little over 20,000 square feet, still, you know, a front yard, a corner lot, but that front yard can be a state-maintained road, which pushes that front yard even further back. So yes, you might still have a square, but there could be, you know, it does also then reduce your amount of buildable area and where you can place that house. So just kind of give you an idea, you know, anywhere in here. Is it not going to like me today? Yeah, it's not going to like me today. It's going to try and draw on it, but it's not liking me. Anywhere within that dashed area, that's where you can build the house. So when you're thinking about, you know, and sometimes you do see the survey and it shows the dashed line, that's where somebody has to build on their property. And even though, again, you have two rectangles, you know, maybe there's something unique about them. One is rather small, one is a larger size, but those setbacks could be creating some issues for that property. We also have curved lots. They do exist. You'll probably start seeing them at some point if you haven't already. Now, curved lots, like if it's all fronted on Washington Street, again, a 5,000 square foot lot, but look at what's being taken away for the front yard. I mean, pretty much a good chunk of this property is the front yard setback. So your buildable area starts getting smaller and smaller. And again, on the other side, on the right side, you have a 21,000 square foot lot. Well, it's still curved, you have two different roads. So one's still front, so you still have a large area that's being occupied by the front yard setback, and then you have a corner front yard setback. So, well.
So in both of these cases, visually, so we're looking at less than 50% being buildable.
Potentially, yes. So that's something to keep in mind in different lot sizes. Again, I didn't do none of this is to scale, just to kind of get you to start thinking about what the buildable area is, and just to start thinking, you know, you have your corner lots, that you start seeing the area shrinking, so that's where you can place your house. Your corner lots, you know, it's gonna follow that curve. And then we get into our through lots. Again, I'm talking 3/4 acre and a 1/2 acre size lots, but if you have a through lot, you know, one's typically a state-maintained road, so you've got a 40-foot front yard setback typically. And on the private street, you could have a 30-foot. So if you have a 100-foot depth lot, and you've lost 70 feet to setbacks, is 30 feet really enough room to get everything to fit? Or do you know, do they need to, you know, maneuver something a little bit one way or the other? So it's just start to get you thinking. And, you know, on the other side, while it's more of a rectangular shape, it's also slightly curved. So, you know, you're looking at those setbacks, you know, does that start to impact anything regarding where a house can be built? And again, start thinking about, you know, in this case, on the one on the left with the through lot, an accessory structure. An accessory structure can encroach into your side and rear yard, except for there's no rear yard on this property, so it can only encroach into the side yard. And depending on how big it is, under 600 square feet, your accessory structure can be 5 feet from your side and rear property lines. If it is 600 square feet or over, it has to meet your principal structure setbacks. So if we think of this one on the left as being AR1, you have 40 foot, 30 foot front yard setbacks, and your side yards are 15. Where can you put, you know, a 700 square foot pole building or shed? You know, because while they can encroach, do we start running into issues? So just things to start thinking about. And then if you think about them as a smaller lot, because we have seen that in the past, the smaller lots, even though it's 14,000 square feet, does that then shrink that buildable area? And if you're getting into a 6,200 square foot lot, again, a small lot does not comply with the current zoning code. Because the smallest size you can do per code in a cluster subdivision is 7,500. 7,500 is the smallest you can go in a cluster subdivision, and that is designed that way. We have a lot of lots that are 30 by 100. I know there's, I think there's a 30 by 90 or 30 by 70 square foot lot size lot in this county has a house on it. And with when we reduced, made the small lot side, small setbacks for the small lot setbacks, they were actually able to do a little bit of addition because they only could have a 10 foot wide house because of the setbacks. So, you know, start thinking about, okay, you know, what's reasonable, what makes sense for, again, through lots can be kind of difficult for people. And then we even have some weird shaped lots, and they do exist, our pie shaped lots. So in one instance, you really don't have a rear yard. So yes, it might be a large size, but it's kind of a weird lot. Then that just kind of shrinks where a house can go. And if you have a triangular shaped or a pie shaped lot, how do you put a square house in a triangle? So things to kind of think about, because, you know, well, yes, you know, you've got something, but how does it then fit, you know, and then how does it kind of keep in character? And also something to think about, well, I did this as, you know, a front and side. Think about it, if this was a through lot or a corner lot and those setbacks were even further increased, what would that do to that lot and that ability to build, even if it met the minimum size requirement, you know, because that can actually have an impact of where you can place a building on the property. Any questions? Just, okay. And then our favorite is our non-conforming structures. The lighter green is what's existing, and we'll see it a lot. You know, an existing building, if it existed in 1968, from our aerials, we know it's good. Interim zoning went into effect in 1969, and official zoning went into effect in 1970. So if we see it on a 1968 aerial, we know it's non-conforming. After that, hopefully something happened. We'll figure that out. But and we've had some instances where houses were built 80, 90, 100 years ago. You know, the road didn't exist, you know, back then, or the road was a dirt road. So the house was built where it was. There was no zoning. So we have an existing house. Somebody wants a new addition. You're just trying to upgrade something, but it also needs to encroach. You know, so like if the house is already on the right-hand side, is so far into the front yard setback that the rear addition is also then into your front yard setback or your corner front. You know, that goes into thinking about what's unique about the property. Can it otherwise be developed if you have something existing? You know, did the property owner really create that? Is it in character with the neighborhood? You know, just start thinking, running those through your head. You know, and like the accessory structure in the back, well, maybe it was there and they needed to do addition or they needed to do something. So then maybe it used to be able to meet the 5 foot and now they're adding on and now we've got, you know, it's more than 600 square feet. It needs to meet principal structure setbacks. But what's the issues with that? And I just like, you know, again, if we have something that's on a curve, all of that is front yard or a corner. You've got your front and your corner front, and your corner front is typically 15 feet. And I know we hear about height a lot, so I thought I'd go through fences. Fences, 3.5 feet, front yard setback, not a problem. You know, if you're putting it beyond the front yard setback line, you can go up to 7 feet in your side and rear property lines. But sometimes we run into issues where there's a request or there's something going on that the fence needs to be a little bit taller. Sometimes, depending on where you're putting your pool, there's a code requirement that your fence around your pool has to be 4 feet. Well, the code says 3.5 feet, so how do we address that? But I wanted to kind of give you a diagram of, you know, 3.5 feet at the property line. If you push it back, then it can go up to 7 feet. So I also kind of thought we'd kind of go through the standards, just some examples, again, uniqueness, just to start thinking, okay, we've got that pie-shaped lot and it's a small lot. You know, how do we build that house? Is that there's something unique about that? Or even if it's a rectangle and it's a small lot, is there something unique about that? And then where you can build in that? Because I think a lot of your items are going to come down to the buildable area. Because while it might be a decent sized lot, what do those setbacks do to where you can actually place that house on that property? You know, can't otherwise be developed. You know, what's going on with it? You know, do you have a corner that's pushing those setbacks farther and creating that buildable area smaller? You know, do you have something that it's elongated that then kind of, you know, when you put your setbacks on, you get more of a smaller area to play with, even though you might have a larger lot? You know, it's not created by the applicant. You know, a lot of smaller lots, they existed. They've existed prior to zoning. We have a lot of them out there. You know, people will buy a house that has existed, you know, for 60, 70, 80 years. Is there something that's already going on with that? Is there something unique about that? You know, was it a corner lot when they bought it? You know, I think I can tell you most people don't realize that their through lot is a front yard. They just don't understand that. We do try to educate as much as we can, but, you know, not everybody, it's like, well, it's my backyard. It's the back of the house, you know. But for a zoning perspective, it is actually a front yard. So it won't alter the essential character of the neighborhood. So I just kind of like, hey, if they're all in a line, is that in keeping with the character of the neighborhood? You know, is there something that, you know, or if you ended up putting that house all the way to the left and pushed it back to the front yard and it complied with the setback, would that be in keeping with the character of the neighborhood, or would that look more out of character of the neighborhood? Because, you know, everything else is up front, but you've got another house that sits all the way back. Is that the character of the neighborhood, something to think about? And would that be a detriment to the neighborhood?
Question?
Yes.
We sometimes get asked, or for what little I've been here, there's a property that's not in compliance. Small lot. There's a request for an addition to increase the size of the non-compliance. Lack of a better way to say it. I struggle with that.
So it's kind of like this one, this situation that I put back on the screen, is you've got an existing house. It's non-conforming. You know, maybe it's been there. You know, maybe there's a reason.
Typically a long time.
Typically they're there, you know, a very long time. Something's happened. You know, we've had it in the past, you know, somebody's passed away, the family or the trust, the estate's trying to sell the house, and oh, look, you know, two property owners ago, they did an addition without permission. So we've got something that's not, that, how do they address it? In this case, we've got something, okay, we've got something that doesn't comply. Maybe we've got a small lot that we have something that's existed for a while. Okay, is that a uniqueness? So we've got something that's non-conforming. Did they create it? They bought it that way. Would you say that? I'm just going to ask questions and you can have, this is what I do to the applicants all the time.
It comes that way, but now they're coming and asking for the addition that expands the non-compliance.
Okay. Is that unreasonable to ask?
I'm asking you.
I don't make the decision. So what we do is we ask and we have the conversation with the applicant. So if you have a 100-year-old house, but adding an addition to a 100-year-old house, does that make sense to make it more, especially in if we're retiring and we need more living space or we need to open it up to make it a little bit more functional as we age so we can live in place?
For this particular owner, to your example, there, let's say there's another owner, but it also rolls back into in keeping with the neighborhood. I struggle with consistency of decision.
Okay, so in this instance, if they're doing an addition to the rear, how are you impacting the character of the neighborhood? Because really your character of the neighborhood is going to be the front.
Let's say it's the front then.
Okay, are we coming all the way to the property line, or are we just adding a couple feet here and there that is kind of consistent with the neighborhood?
We're adding on to a non-compliance.
Mm-hmm. You can do that if you so approve, but it's what does the character look like?
I'm probably making more of a statement,
okay,
than asking a question, because I think about neighbor A, B, C, and D, and consistency of decision. I struggle with putting today's standards on something that was previously determined to be non-compliant.
The laws of non-conforming uses is such that in theory, over time, the properties will become conforming. That is not to say, however, that this board cannot grant variances, because you certainly can, but they still have to meet those five standards, which is why often you'll see a good example of that may be a lot that's undersized or has that unusual shape, and maybe the structure is non-conforming in part. I mean, it was likely non-conforming because it was built prior to, but if the lot is a small lot with an unusual shape, there very well may not be anywhere else on the lot for that home to go. So if they were trying to do a reasonable addition to it that was to the non-conforming structure, you all could find that a variance would be needed. Now, conversely, if you have a house that, you know, you look at and go, hey, it's a 100,000 square foot lot, and I think they could build a house on it, that may be a different story than what you have otherwise. But you have to look at the uniqueness of that property in that situation, go through those five factors.
So what may make sense for this house honestly might not make sense for that house, based on there might be something different for that property, even though they're next door. So just because you granted a variance here, there might be some different circumstances that may say there's no need for relief on the next door property, or there could be relief that could be met for the next door. It all depends on, so I know you're concerned about consistency, but it's all about the criteria, the five different criteria, and how they're met. And understanding that, I think a lot of people coming up here,
okay, well, but the
are the, doing it themselves. The, so
the tough one for me is number three.
Created by the applicant.
Absolutely, because if it's being created by the applicant, to me that's either a yes or a no.
Understood. I think there's sometimes that where it could be maybe, because okay, I have a 5,000 square foot lot and it is pie shaped. I bought it. I'm just trying to do a reasonable use for what is allowed by the zoning code and put a house there. Maybe there was an old single wide, maybe it's been vacant, it's just been there, but I'm just trying to use it reasonably. But did they create yes, they want to build the house, but are they creating it because of the uniqueness that is to the property?
Okay, we've had examples of rectangular lots, consistently rectangular, and we're talking about expansion of buildable, the building envelope, and the reduction of land within the lot that's there, and the original was non-conforming. I'm making a statement. It's not necessarily a question, and I understand, and you know, you can talk to my wife, because when I come home after these every night, and I'm thinking, you won't, you know, every one of these is unique. I get it. It's unique. The analytical side of me struggles with that uniqueness. I'm bearing here, so.
It's okay, and that's what staff's here for, is like, you're looking at an application, you have questions, you can call us. We're not going to tell you however you should vote, but we can, if you have questions, and we can have excellent, we're happy to explain anything.
It still comes to me, I'm only speaking for myself, is that it still comes to number three.
Right.
And to that extent, what I would encourage the board to all do is, you know, you have opportunities to ask questions and build the record. And, you know, Mr. Workman has been here long enough to know there's been a lot of times where we've had folks that come up here and they, you know, we often have pro se folks who maybe the only time they ever speak in front of a public body. So I think we do try to be cognizant of that. But we also know that they have a burden to meet in order to get what they're seeking for this board. So when they're up there, you know, there's been times where people don't ask, you know, don't provide anything, and the board has said, you need to meet these five standards, and we'll ask some questions. And sometimes we do have folks that just, they struggle, and, you know, it's fair to ask them questions. Do you have, where's your well, where's your septic, do you have some, you know, do you have a slope in your property, do you have wetlands, do you have, you know, something unique to this property, to build the record. And it very well may be that it's not that you're coaching them or anything, it's you want to know the answer. And if that helps you in your deliberation on that created question or the unique question or any of the other questions, then I think you should ask those kinds of questions. Especially if you've seen in cases before where, and this is certainly I think where Mrs. Cornwell has been going, you may have cases where I recognize that in the past we found this to be unique because I remember somebody was able to convince me that it was because their property had some unique condition. If you remember something similar, you could ask that same type of question. I've seen this, I mean, this is something I found important before, and sometimes they can't meet that.
Sure.
And I think you can also ask, you know, for some lots, okay, we have a half acre lot, okay, but I got wetlands and a tax ditch in the back, you know, that doesn't always show up. Or I've got woods in the back, you know, that doesn't always show up on the survey, but they're asking for relief because cutting down, you know, 5,000 square feet of trees is not financially feasible. So that, I think, is something you also can always ask, you know, because sometimes it's, you know, well, maybe there's an option, but is that financially feasible for the applicant to do as well? Because, you can get a lot of rectangular-shaped lots, and, like, in this instance, rectangular shape. You got a front yard setback, but, you know, you might have a septic over on one side that's impacting something, or you might have a tax ditch. You might have a nice wooded area that they're trying to preserve. You know, there might be other things going on with that property that could create a uniqueness, even though the shape may not be, it might be like a rectangular shape, which may not be the most unique, but there definitely could be uniquenesses on the property themselves as well. Thanks. Does that help? Okay. Any other questions? Okay. So yeah, sometimes you do get a small lot, they didn't create it. Sometimes you've got an existing house, they didn't create it. But you've got to think about, you know, what's going on as well on that property. Won't alter the essential character of the neighborhood. Again, they're just trying to keep it in line with the neighborhood. Is it the minimum variance that is needed? Okay, so if you have, you know, the two houses on the right are existing, they're built at the front yard setback, and the one, if, you know, it's a through lot, you know, the front yard's the 40, and they just need like a, you know, foot and a half, but it's going to be, you know, in line. Is that the minimum that they need? Or are they asking for, you know, hey, I've got a 40-foot, and I'm asking for a 30-foot variance. Is that really the minimum you need? You know, and sometimes it's, you know, can you make something smaller? And we do try to work with the applicants and ask some of these questions up front, you know, to say, hey, what's going on? You know, we have a conversation just to say, so they understand, you know, what they're looking for, and if we can say, okay, well, you're asking for this. Is there any way this would work? They will, like, sometimes they'll go, oh, yeah, that could work, and then they can actually reduce it, but they still might need a variance for something, but it's a lesser of a variance. And then special use exceptions. And there's only one standard.
Well, let's wait.
Oh, go ahead.
Do you have anybody have any questions on the standards?
No? Okay. Any come later, give me a call. I'm here all week. So the special use exception, there's only one standard, is it will not substantially adversely affect the uses of adjacent and neighboring properties. So it can actually have a negative effect. It just cannot have a substantially adverse effect. Affect adversely. I always want to flip those.
And a fair question there to ask is, what are the uses of those properties? How are they being used? You know, one of the things is just, what's in the neighborhood there? And, you know, it's a fair question to ask.
And I think a lot of our special uses are daycares, you know, and if it's in a residential neighborhood, how is a daycare of 10 kids going to impact, you know, the neighborhood, you know? So think about that. Other items that are typically brought up in the meeting are views. I think heard that a lot. Views are not protected.
I have heard people say they paid a premium for a view. I've heard that.
They may have, but it's not protected.
It's not protected.
So they might have bought, and there's a nice wooded area on the farm next door, and that's where the farmer hasn't been farming. But those trees are not protected. That view shed is not protected because it's a property right that somebody has to do with that. And I have heard a lot that I've paid a premium for this lot. That view is not protected. The height, you know, it's like, hey, I want to build a 42-foot height. My house is only 30. If you're an AR1, GR, MR, the maximum height of a house is 42 feet. So just because, you know, I have a one-story ranch doesn't mean I can't build a 42-foot tall house next door because the height, the maximum height of in the zoning district is 42 feet. So people, we hear that a lot as well, that it, you know, concern about height. Well, you could have built your house at 42 feet. You chose a different design that doesn't prohibit the neighbor from building a house at 42 feet. We also hear about property values. If they're going to complain or provide evidence, they need to provide evidence about property values either increasing or decreasing. So, if, you know, they have to provide evidence to the board because you'll hear that a lot. It's like it's going to impact the property value either negatively or favorably, but they'd have to provide evidence for that to be considered by the board.
In writing, not hearsay.
Yes.
Janelle, sorry, just to back up, is it worth just pointing out the difference between views and character? Because character is, there's a visual component to character.
Yeah, views would be more aesthetic. You're overlooking the stormwater management pond, or you have the woods next door, you have that farm next door. But the character is, I have all single family houses next door. That's the character of the area, but the aesthetic is going to be, and it can also be aesthetic as well, but typically what they're going to pay the premium for is that woods, that farm next door that, you know, a couple weeks it'll be turning into a house. So,
or nothing but corn.
Or nothing but corn, and then complain about the corn or the chickens, which are permitted to be there. They're both permitted to be there. So these were the three, the views, the height, and the property values. I know we've heard a lot over the Board of Adjustment years, so I wanted to kind of bring those up for you. And now I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Sharp to talk about some procedures and process. I also note you all have, I will go over your tablet. If you want to stay for a few minutes, I can go over your tablet. You were given instructions on how to download. If you just click the link to get to your paperless packet and you don't download it, it's going to crash on you, because I've had that happened with the board of the Planning Commission. They go, well, why? And now I'm going to admit theirs are like 300 pages long. Yours are not.
That's probably why it crashed.
And they were trying to view it, and they forgot to download it. And the minute they downloaded it, it was like, oh, it's not crashing. So just try to make sure you download it. If you want to make comments, I did note there's, you know, how to make the comments. Please check your email. If you do get email, do not respond to all. You cannot have a conversation for FOIA requirements under your county email. By the way, your county email is your first name dot your last name at sussexcountyde.gov. We will be, if we're going to correspond, we're going to send that the email to that email address. So please try to check it on a regular basis. The computers, if you have questions, or the tablets, I'm sorry, they're iPads, they're tablets. If you have questions, just give me a call. Happy to help. Or if you want to stop by, it's like, hey, I can't get this to work, just stop by to see me. I'm happy to help with that. And now, Mr. Sharp.
Janelle.
Yes.
I won't have no more emails on the phone then. Everything's coming to the
Tablet. You do not want to put your county email address onto your phone or your personal computer, because then they would be subject to FOIA.
Okay, but
your emails are going to come through your tablet.
Not through the phone.
Okay, so you have to check it.
So what we might do is, for the first few times, send it to both emails.
Okay.
But I need you to get used to using your county email address.
Okay.
If you would be so kind.
The wind's going to blow northeast 10 to 20 tomorrow, so I will not be flying if you want me to come by tomorrow afternoon.
If you want to stop by, bring everything with you, and we can go over it tomorrow.
Okay. Must be a front coming through.
What's going on?
All right, Mr. Sharp.
Thank you, Ms. Cornwall. I'm going to try to make my comments brief, but I was going to, basically it was a review of some of the rules of procedure and a couple other just items. In the rules, just so that you know, with a quorum, we have to have three members here. You have to have at least three votes minimum in order to approve a variance or special use exception or to overrule a decision that's been appealed to you. We don't get the appeals very often, but you will see those from time to time. Any other matters before you, it's just a majority vote. So just something to keep in mind. Votes are handled by roll call vote as per our rules. We do have some rules on persons who are in attendance about applause and disruption, as well as signs. I just make that a note that we don't typically have that problem, but there are times we have a lot of folks here. So we do have rules to enforce that. They are fairly reasonable, and they give some direction to the chair. Amendments to applications, I think we just had a little brief discussion of that. The rules don't allow for an applicant to amend it once we've advertised it. So if we advertise for front yard and then they say, hey, I want to have a rear yard added to it, we don't allow for those amendments after the advertisement. Except that if the size can be changed, if someone were to come and say, I'm asking for variances from the side yard setback, and at the hearing we get an updated survey that shows it's a different size, that's permissible in our rules. And we also, if you look at our advertising, there are times where if we are very sure, you know, the staff's confident as to what's being sought, so I'm asking for a shed. A shed is the only item that's at issue. If we talk about other structures, that's because we're not sure if maybe there's an HVAC or steps, or sometimes we're not given as much clarity on some of the documents. So we do try to provide as much information as we can in the advertising. If an applicant were to come and like I said before, we've advertised it for a rear yard and they say, I want a front yard as well, they're going to have to come back. If we've advertised for one structure and then they want to come for another, they've got to come back. As far as motions, they're oral, votes are all oral. However, the final decision is the written one, which gets circulated and you vote on. But when you do the motions, if you can, try to articulate the reasons for it. Helps us with the findings. It also helps if there's ever a question, you know, what the thoughts of the board were in making those. The board has a right to impose conditions, and our code actually has a list of some conditions. It's in section 115-212, but also includes a catch-all that says such other conditions as are necessary. So you may want to take a look at that. It does have a fairly lengthy list there, which I won't bore you with all those details at the moment. We also have in our rules allowing for motions for rehearing. We don't get those very often, though we had some earlier this year that Mr. Workman and Ms. McGee may recall. Mr. Williamson may have been on, I'm not sure. But there's some very strict standards there that would allow someone to apply for relief there if there was a mistake, surprise, excusable neglect. There's a few other things as well, but there's some very narrow standards there that apply. So if we do have those come up, you'll probably hear from me at the night of that motion with some explanation on it, because we just don't get those very often. Extension requests. Under the code, the approvals are good for 2 years. In prior years, they used to be only good for a year, but the code has changed. So they're good for 2 years once you approve them, and that's from the date of the written decision's approval. And if there's an appeal to it, it stays until the end of an appeal. After that time is up, the applicant can apply for a one-year extension for good cause, and we had a couple of those this evening. Withdrawal request, you will get this from time to time where maybe there's been an application that was in your materials and you're preparing for it. An applicant has a right to withdraw up to 2 days before the hearing and 2 business days before the hearing. And they can withdraw for good cause anytime thereafter. If they fail to appear, it's deemed to be withdrawn and it's they can't bring a substantially similar application for a year. The next, freedom of information. This is one that you are subject to FOIA. This is open meetings. So all your decisions are made in the public, discussions made in the public. With that, there are requirements that you can't discuss any of the business outside of the hearing. And I know from experience the board's been very good about that. If there's a quorum can be anywhere as well. We talked about a quorum before. So if, you know, we had a luncheon with Sussex County Council the other day, they advertised and said a quorum of the board may be there because it was potential that there would be a quorum at that time. No poll voting is allowed. So there's, you know, you can't go, hey, what did you vote? What did you vote? You know, that you can't get around it that way. And, you know, you should try to avoid, any emails or correspondence to members of the public that may come to you. You will get that from time to time. If you ever have that, say, I can't talk to you. You have to end those conversations so that doesn't, you know, taint your objectivity if it ever comes before you and in the record.
I'm going to jump in there real quick. So you now have county email addresses, so we do have public hearings. So if you're going to get like a letter in opposition, all I ask is that you send it to the planning office so we can make sure it's part of the record. Because you could get letters in opposition. Please do not reply to them. Just forward them to staff because that way then we can just make sure they're part of the record.
I know if you ever get like a mail, you know, I know Mr. Workman years ago, I think has come up where get an unsolicited package or something. What is this?
Yeah.
Let me know it's right away. Get it to me. And if you can tell right away that it's something that you shouldn't be looking, you know, shouldn't have received, it was, you know, don't even look at the rest. Just give it to us and then we can look at it. Or if it's something that's...
We usually just bring it in and give it to you.
Yeah. I mean, there's no reason. You don't know what it is. We'll take a look at it and see if it's something that needs to be included in the record or otherwise. Making motions. Don't be afraid, and we did this tonight, don't be afraid to talk about the case before you make motions. It's certainly an opportunity for you all to kind of express your opinions or if you have questions or, I think this or that, it's perfectly okay. Remember, and this was something that came up at the luncheon the other day, remember words matter, so things that you say on the record. We are audio taped, we are videotaped, and the transcripts are available in the event there's ever an appeal. So just remember that the words you say do matter. So just keep that in mind. And the last thing is you know, focus on what's in the record before you. If you don't feel that you have enough in the record, certainly you have a right to, you know, ask staff for more information or leave the record open or ask the applicant for more information if you wish. But focus on what's been presented before you, and I think you all do a good job of that. But just a friendly reminder. That's all I have on my list.
And that's all I had. So hopefully this was helpful. If we notice in the future that we've got a smaller agenda, if you have ideas that you know might be helpful for a refresher or something you have concerns about, we'd be happy to do something like this again. Does anybody have any questions, concerns?
Yes.
Go for it.
I guess it's for Jamie and you, and I guess for the county council. No names, just cases brought up to us that they keep doing things wrong all the time. Builders doing stuff wrong. Is there anything that we can do, or when they come in, deny them from doing it, or fining the people?
The board does not have the authority to impose fines, yeah. But certainly if you felt they haven't met the standards, then you can deny them.
Well, yes, but...
You're talking about not even giving them a permit?
Yes.
Okay, that's something other legal has looked into, and I think we're still trying to figure out what authority the county does have, because the county does not issue business licenses.
Okay.
So we cannot like revoke a business license because we don't issue those. I know
the problem I have is that the homeowner is suffering. He's getting the short end of the stick, you know what I mean? And here we are denying something that he didn't cause at all. But he's got there, his building down or something, or part of that building, where being nice that he has something that, or the county can fall back and say, you don't get any permits, or, I mean, I guess you can't, I don't know. It's something that needs to be looked at, I think.
We have looked at that. I know not Jamie, but other county attorneys have looked into that to try and figure out what legal mechanisms the county has.
Okay.
And unfortunately, there are some issues with certain things.
You're talking about repetitive abuses?
Yes.
Right.
Yes. I mean, they keep coming in all the time.
Completely understand.
And I hate to deny something that the guy don't know anything about it.
The guy's sitting there innocent, you know, trusted his builder, and he doesn't know. I wouldn't know.
No.
Yeah. I mean,
here we are making somebody tear a half a building.
So down. We'll continue to look at that.
Yeah.
We will continue to see what mechanisms the county has to try and alleviate some of those situations.
I mean, we sent letters, Jamie sent letters many times, we asked.
Many different contractors and builders.
Yes.
I think I think when we have sent those letters, we've gotten, I think, some responsiveness
mm-hmm.
from
yes.
them.
And
so
some,
I think they've been helpful.
And some we haven't.
And that's true, too.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not going to say any name, but you know, we know who they are.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then just, hey, Board of Adjustment take care of it, and that's not right.
Was I told, or maybe I imagined it, that at least now, ever if they apply for a building permit, they have to initial?
Correct.
Setbacks?
Yes.
Because we've had...
So we've put a couple different practices in place for any new residential... In the last couple of months, in the last year or so, the planning office has been reviewing all new residential permits. So we're doing that extra review. But also at the permit counter, the permit techs will make them initial their setbacks. And they also, we print out like the aerial maps you see, we print those out and mark the setbacks on them. We also note that it's not to scale. So they understand where that building can go on that property. So they are understanding, because not everything comes in with a survey. So they have a better understanding of what those setbacks are. So they have an idea. But we are trying to address the setback issues farther up front.
Because we approve or deny on the five standards.
Correct.
Which is good. Then here comes somebody who doesn't know, or is his own general contractor, just, you know, measured from the wrong spot, and he's 20 feet, 30 feet off, and we're making him tear his building down. You know, I think the county, I don't know the best way to articulate this, but they need to have, when the county issues a building permit, I mean, these people need to know whether they come in, I mean, whether it's Joe Blow Farmer or somebody from Chubbers, I mean, a professional
right.
builder.
Again, we're getting them to initial, in we do our best to make sure they are educated and aware. But sometimes, you know, the paperwork doesn't transfer all the way or something else happens and mistakes do happen, you know. You know, we have an administrative corrective process, so if we recognize we've made a mistake or something else has happened, we can address that without it coming to the Board of Adjustment. We have other mechanisms to try and alleviate some situations. We are working, the planning office is working with building code, so the building code officials, when they're going out for that first footer inspection, this is just starting, is that there's, if they don't, they can't, they're going to try and measure the setbacks at the beginning. That is very new. That has happened in the last month and a half. So that is very new that we are trying to work together a little bit more between the departments. So we're trying to catch any issues up front. So we are still infancy stage, still getting the training worked out, still getting everybody trained, but we are trying to do that. So when the building code inspectors do go out, they can kind of recognize this doesn't look right, and they can fail that footer inspection, and then we can, the zoning inspector come out and verify, or we can ask for an as-built survey. So we are working on different mechanisms to try and alleviate some of the situations you have seen in the past. We're working, we're constantly coming up with new ideas, new processes to try and alleviate the issues that the public are facing, so then you are seeing fewer applications.
Because when we deny something and they have to tear down the, I mean, I know the hardship that's being placed on them. It's, I feel terrible about it, but we can't make our decision on a motion, so.
But you can use financial as part of a decision.
Okay.
And yes. The department is also finding out where air conditioners are going, and that's kind of a ongoing.
That is an ongoing process that we are trying to get everybody to show them. Again, when new residential permits come in, we don't always see the surveys. I mean, it's rare for us to see a survey when a placement permit plan when a new house comes in. So we're trying to go, okay, it looks like the house is going to meet, and we are trying to note on our permit, because the planners actually do a review, say this looks like this and this, and it looks like it'll fit, you know, and we try to note that it's like, hey, make sure the HVAC or this are complying with the setbacks.
Regarding the county email, when I've added on emails in the past, there's usually a base system, Gmail, Ymail, MSN, or something like that. Do we know what ours is with the county?
The at sussexcountyde.gov?
No, I understand.
Oh.
It's usually attached to?
It's Outlook.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Sam.
Any other questions? If you think of them, feel free to email me.
I will say one thing, since I've been on the board for a long time, I noticed Jamie, all of you guys going right, asking, tell them information, tell them what to do. That's a really great thing. Jamie is really, I had a different lawyer before, great lawyer, but Jamie's more out with us and tells us more what's going on. I mean, he's in contact with us. And I really see a big difference in how this is run now. It's a lot better.
Yeah, we try to, because again, a lot of the public are on their own, so we just try to reinforce what the process is. We don't tell them how to answer the questions. We just try to enforce the process. And I think we're going to try and be a little bit more vocal and just provide information. Again, we do not take sides. We're not supporting or in opposition. But I think if we can provide additional information, because I mean, sometimes what they're trying to explain, we completely understand what they're trying to do, and sometimes we can just,
we're sort of lost in that, and we've done that before. Jamie has, and we thought a different way then. I mean, you think,
yeah,
different.
Right, because it's like somebody's trying to explain something, and we can just make it clearer.
I think there's been a couple of developments in the last couple of years that have been really helpful to that end. I mean, the administrative variance process that Ms. Cornwell was discussing, that was passed in March of 2018, before, the board used to get a lot of small variances, and I know Mr. Workman remembers these, and that process can now go through the planning and zoning department. Mm-hmm. Now, if someone objects, then it will come here. But there's an administrative process. The same thing with if someone had gotten a CO issued or building permit or what have you. So what's happened is that has substantially thinned the herd, so to speak, on the types of applications that come before you. So before, where there would be a lot of very small variance requests or things where a building permit, a CO had been issued for something that had been there many years, you're not getting those anymore. The ones that are coming before you tend to be more proposed, although we do get, as you see, the existing. But the thought there is that we're hoping that down the road it should be more proposed type things, so you can evaluate a proposal rather than something that's been built. And I think that it's greatly reduced the number of applications that we have coming through. I mean, we're advertising now out, I think, a month.
We're a month. We're scheduling in October.
So, whereas I know it'd be months before people would get out.
There was at one point, it was like 8 months out, we were scheduling Board of Adjustment meetings because...
Yeah, and that what's happened is that has really led to perhaps more meatier applications before you all, but also it's allowed for the office isn't getting clogged up with as many applications they have to process, and it's also allowing some of the public to move ahead with whatever their request was without having to come to the board.
I think if we all do this once a year like this.
Very good.
Okay.
Very good. It's good information.
And again, if you ever have any questions or anything, just give myself or Jamie a call. We're happy to answer any questions.
And I don't think you need to be if you want to ask an applicant a question about their application, I think it should be asked. Don't think about it afterwards or regret, well, I wish I had asked that, because that's part of the record and that's what we're basing our decision on.
And I think, if you don't mind, if you have a question for staff, and I know you're always asking Mr. Sharp if he has any questions, we might see something differently. I know I did with the one you approved last meeting, that it just, like, I'm going to pick something up, because just my background as a planner for 20 years, I see things a little bit differently. So if you want to ask staff questions, we're happy to do that. If you want to, you know, use staff, we are here, we are happy to help, we want to help, we want to provide as much information as possible so that the board can make a proper decision.
We did it before, but when I was on, they used to send a letter across to me, a note, ask this question. I mean, they weren't really involved, but they're getting more involved now, which is a good thing. But I mean, they see something we didn't see, and just pass a note over to me and ask that question. And that was a really good question, but we didn't think about it. I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, we're just here to support the board. Any other questions, concerns, anything I can help with?
Thank you, that was good.
Yeah. You're welcome. I want those matrices memorized by next meeting, please.
Need a motion?
Oh, yes. I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Motion and second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Brent wants to stay here, so we'll let him stay.
Again?
Where is this supposed to go?